Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Govani Pachani, Vasesa Simran, Basanti Avastani, Vande Yama Shri Kham, Shri Yuta Parikamam, Shri Guru Vaishnava Vastan, Shri Guru Kram Sagujatam Sagana, Sadvaitam Sabitutam Vijana, Saitam Krishna Chaitam Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana, Tashi Vishkam Vastan. So, we're here January 3rd, 2010, right? Abu Dhabi. Nice to see some old faces again. I hope you, excuse me, I slipped on some stairs and broke my foot in Oman, and I have to periodically put it up, so I'm sorry. I know I'm being improper, but please excuse me. So for those of you who don't know me, just my name is Urmila, and I'm sure you can tell by my accent that I'm American. I'm also was born and raised in New York City, which means I'm was brought up in a culture that's very coarse and brass and arrogant. I've tried to change my culture, hasn't worked. So please excuse me in advance. I'm sure I will behave in ways that by your culture are considered rude. So I'm asking you in advance to please excuse me. I really have tried, but I think it's like you dye your hair, the roots always show. You know? You try to adopt another culture, it doesn't quite work. So I was thinking a lot about how for pretty much all of you here, you're all ethnic Indians, right? And you've come here to a Muslim country where you're away from your own community and your own culture. And I think that these gatherings of ISKCON are a really nice way to kind of feel home again, isn't it? Right? Everybody wants to be home. There's that sense. I mean, unless you had a really awful home. Everyone has a sense of wanting to go home. Even Krishna likes to be home. Krishna likes to be a place where he can relax. This is why, of course, some people consider that Narayana is superior to Krishna. The residents of Vaikuntha think Narayana is superior to Krishna. But why we say that Krishna is the original, well, Mata Parajam Nanyat, he says so. But also we see that a person is in their ultimate manifestation when they're relaxing at home. If you really want to know what somebody's like, you can get to know something of them at work or in a formal situation, but if you really want to get to know what someone's like, you have to meet them at home. That's why you don't really know what someone's like that you're going to marry until you're married to them. And people are in their home, they relax, they show their real self. People want to be accepted for what they are. They know that they're among friends who are going to, isn't that family, home, people who are going to accept you for what you are? So as I say, Krishna also likes that. I mean, he likes the praise of the, oh, no, Narayana, oh, glory to you, oh, glory to you. But he also likes it when Yasoda says, hey, come back home for lunch, you street boy. What are you doing? Right? Or even when Lalita says, okay, Radharani's not going to talk to you anymore. Or the cowherd boys say, what are you doing going home? We won't play with you anymore if you go home. He enjoys that. He enjoys that. That's being home. Right? With our most intimate friends and relatives, we can even jokingly insult one another, right? Isn't it? In love. So everyone wants that, where you can just relax, be yourself, you don't have to put on any kind of show to impress anybody. People are liking you for who you are. And we all want to be part of a general community. So this really struck me. Two different airports. One of them was in Shanghai. I can't remember where the other one was. But twice I was in an airport and I had been away from America for a very, very long time. And I remember at the airport in Shanghai, some people ahead of me in the, do you say line or queue here? What do you say, line or queue? Queue, okay. I noticed you use some American English and some British English. You haven't quite made up your mind. So there were some people ahead of me in the queue who were speaking American accent English, and not only American, but Northeastern. I think they were from Connecticut, which is close to New York, if you don't know American geography. And I immediately felt some kinship with them. That was what struck me. Immediately. I said, oh, are you from America? Where are you from in America? What part of America are you from? instantly. Just because they were speaking my language. Oh, I have another one. No, I have, I don't want, I don't need that one. But thank you for thinking about me. I have another one too. We're all set. All kinds of weather. Perfectly equipped as a complete whole. Thank you. So just someone speaking my language with my accent, I immediately felt, what was really interesting was that I immediately felt that I could trust them. That was what really struck me. I thought these perfect strangers. And I felt that I could trust them. And I had a similar experience once in another airport also. But it was reversed, where people asked me, where are you from? Oh, I'm from America. Oh, it sounds like you're from the Northeast. Yes, I was brought up in New York. And they immediately started talking to me as if we knew each other. And people will even help each other out. I've had that experience also. Or, you know, or sometimes it happens, you're just sitting on the same seat in an airplane with somebody, and you strike up a little conversation, and then if they see that your ride didn't come, they'll help you out because they feel some sense of kinship with you. It's quite interesting. So we look for a community where there is some sense of oneness, where there's something in common. You know, in family, obviously, there's the blood bond. But we look for people who have a similar culture or a similar occupation or a similar life situation that we think, okay, I can relate to this person. And all of us want a community. And I've met many of the devotees here in the Middle East who told me that they took up Krishna consciousness after coming to the Middle East. And I'm sure that part of the reason is that when you're in India, it's easier to take it for granted. It was my culture, it's all around, and when you're away from your home culture, you develop more of a hankering for it. Right? And it could be that just ISKCON's the only thing around that has your culture, and so you start coming to the Hare Krishna movement. So this... this isn't just a desire to be home, to be in a place where you feel comfortable, to be with community, where you have a sense of connection. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, please. This is interesting. This must mean flowers are in short supply. I've never seen garland quite like this before. Pieces of marigolds. Oh, brilliant. Thank you. Yes. No, that's not necessary. That's not necessary. Off to the side a little bit is fine. You can put this more back here. Yeah, that's, thank you. I can't keep it up all the time because that also pains, but I'm supposed to keep it up as much as possible. It's still swollen and it's bruised. So I'm sorry for putting my foot in your face, and please, that's like must be the height of offensiveness, you know, sticking your foot in somebody's face. I'm so sorry. I mean, one thing I see with breaking my foot is kind of humbling. You know, you can't do everything you want to do. Anyway, this urge for home, for family, for community. We often talk about that you're supposed to give up all family attachment, but where does this urge come from? Why do we have this urge for family, for home, for community? Why are we looking for that? Where does it come from? Anybody have any idea where that urge comes from? So we have a description of the ultimate reality that's very personal. A lot of people have an idea that the Indian scriptures, the Vedic scriptures, Sanatana Dharma, aims at an impersonal kind of moksha, where you just own your way into merging into the light. You become nothing. Just float forever. Just shine. And we certainly all have a desire for peace, too. Right? Everybody wants peace. But although everyone wants peace, we also want relationships. And we want relationships with people around whom we can relax and around whom we have some sense of kinship. So the problem is that in this world, we never really find the perfection of that on a material level. Could anyone here say they have absolutely the perfect family? Yeah, we try. We try to have a perfect family. And maybe we try to have the appearance to others that we have the perfect family, which is why no one's going to raise their hand when I ask that question. Of course I have. But really, it's not perfect. Right? You think you're marrying the perfect man, he leaves his dirty socks on the floor. Right? You think you marry the perfect lady, and maybe her doses really aren't that good. Or she nags you. Right? You come home at the end of the day and you want peace and you want relaxation. All she says is, "Oh, I don't want to be around." Right? And you think you're going to have a husband who's going to say, "Oh, you're so beautiful and wonderful." And he goes, "Why don't you do this right? Why don't you do that right? And how come you're getting so fat?" And we'll just speak of the other family members. I'm sure we have at least one family member in our extended family who drives us crazy. Right, or who's kind of an embarrassment or something. Oh, how's so-and-so doing? Oh, yeah, he's doing great. I had an uncle like that. Nobody really knew where he got his... He got a lot of money. But nobody really quite knew where he got his money from. We thought it was gambling. We weren't sure. Nobody was allowed to talk about it. You know, where does Uncle Duke get his money? He had a really nice house. I noticed you have a Saks Fifth Avenue in Dubai. So they were the kind of people who bought all their clothes and furniture and sex with them. Everything marble. But he was an embarrassment to the family. Oh, we had another uncle who was an embarrassment to the family, too. We ran a family business. So my father was obliged to hire him. But every once in a while, my father would say, "That Uncle Josh, he never does any work. He sits around all day reading the paper and smoking cigars. But I can't fire him." And so none of us have a perfect family. And none of us have a perfect community. There's tension in the community, there's misunderstanding, there's criticism. We don't get exactly what we're looking for. And the more, what's really ironic, is the more perfect your family and community is, the more anxiety you're in, because it's all temporary. So if you really do have a perfect marriage, or something close to it, I don't think anyone has a perfect marriage, but you have something close to a perfect marriage, then you're going to be filled with fear. I knew a couple like that. I mean, just really, really in love. And after 12 years of marriage, they still acted like newlyweds. Okay? And the wife told me, she said, "My greatest fear is my husband's going to die." She said, "I'm just practically overwhelmed. Every time he goes out in the car, you know, what will I do if he dies? What will I do if he dies?" One of my friends, a very nice girl from Rajasthan, told me her parents had this beautiful relationship and her father died in a car crash. She said after the funeral, her mother went into bed and never got up. And a year later, she just died of grief. So the more perfect the situation you have is, the more you're afraid of losing it, isn't it? And then, you know, we go through life after life, and in every life, we have to establish these relationships all over again. Find new community, new family, new sense of home. Okay? So our process of Krishna consciousness is to find these things in perfection. To find these things. We're not saying, actually this philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the Vaishnava Acharyas, is very extraordinary. We're not saying, stop desires, which is impossible. Klesho dikatarastesham, avyaktam, chaitasam, avyaktam hi gatir dukam. Krishna says this path is not very pleasing. If you try to stop desires, you ever try to stop desires? I'm sure many of us have tried to stop desires. We thought that was spiritual. Okay, I'm just going to repress my desires. No, I don't feel that way. I don't feel that way. I just don't. No, I don't. Go away. I don't want you to go away. God. Now, if you do that, after a while, what will happen? The desires will come up again, usually stronger. Especially if you're really trying, you know, I don't want to eat that, I don't want to eat that, I don't want to eat that, I don't want to eat What are you thinking about? What you don't want to eat, right? Whatever you think about, that's what you end up doing. Krishna says, whatever you think about, yam yam bhapi sram bhavam, tajajan tekarim. Whatever you think about the time of death, long as your next body. But even in this body, what you're thinking about. Right, we've seen that with some renunciates, even in the Hare Krishna movement. Don't think about women. Don't talk about women. Women are evil. Women. Pretty soon they're with a woman. How'd that happen? Because that's all they're thinking about. And so we find if you try to just repress desires, often they become stronger. Or if you're really successful at repressing desires, generally you become very angry. You ever meet people like that? They're really strict. But they're really angry and bitter and critical. Somehow they're getting their pleasure from anger. Anger gives a kind of pleasure, you know? Gives a kind of energy. So that's not our philosophy. Our philosophy is not to repress desires. Our philosophy is find the actual fulfillment of those desires. Find where those desires can be fulfilled in perfection. And this sangha that we have in this world is kind of preparing us for that. We don't pretend that the sangha, or we shouldn't pretend, that the sangha we have in this world is going to be perfect. It's not. And sometimes people think, well, if people are devotees, they're all going to be perfect. Of course, they don't think that I'm perfect. I think everyone should excuse all of my imperfections, because after all, I'm not pure. But I expect everybody else to be pure, which is sort of interesting. And I get angry when they display the same imperfections that I have. But we don't expect that this sangha in this material world is going to be perfect and exactly what we're looking for. But this sangha in this world can help us open the door to what we're really looking for. We have our eternal family. Lord Brahma says, Yad bhava bhavika diyo manajasta daiva samprapi rupa mahima sanayana bhusha sukta yameva nigama patitas tukamati govinda mani purushanta mahamajara. We have our home. We have our actual home, and it's eternal home. You know, you may have your childhood home and you go back and the house is gone. You know? Somebody else is living in it. Your parents may have passed away. Right? It's not an eternal home. Like for me, all my birth families passed away in the last few years. I think starting in 2005. I lost my sister, my mother, my father, my other sister, and one of my sister's husbands. But our eternal family is not like that. They're always there. They're our eternal family. They never die. We have an eternal home. I mean, actually a home, a house that's ours. That we live. We have an eternal form. And we have a community that we're members of. And in Golok Vrindavan, there's different groups of devotees. We have different moods of relationship with Krishna. So this sangha is meant to open the door to that. That we're assisting each other in the path to our eternal community. And what is the connection? Remember I was saying community is usually people with whom you feel you have some connection, right? There's something in common. So in Vaikuntha, in the spiritual world, what's in common is love for Krishna or love for Narayana. Love for God. Unselfish. And therefore, because everyone has that in common, there's harmony. What's really amazing, though, is that even though everyone has that in common and there's harmony, still we're all eternal individuals. You know, that's what we're... Hare Krishna. Excuse me, I have a broken foot and I'm supposed to keep it up. I'm sorry. Not very nice putting my foot in your face. Oh, please, excuse me. I can't keep it up all the time, though. Put it down. So that's what this sangha is meant to do. That's really why we're coming together. I mean, if we come together just because, you know, we want to eat dosas and idlis and sambar because we miss home, that's okay. That's okay. Krishna says any performance of Krishna consciousness is beneficial. It's not an all or nothing deal. Most religious systems in the world teach it's an all-or-nothing deal, isn't it? Christianity, they say you've only got one life. Either you surrender to Jesus in this life or you go to hell, right? So we're not an all-or-nothing deal. 1%, you still get an advantage. If you just take out Krishna consciousness 1%, then it makes your life probably 10 or 20% better. You take out Krishna consciousness 5%, it makes your life so much better. I mean, just even what you eat will improve, your health will improve. You'll be associated with nicer people. You'll give up some bad habits, you'll have some genuine spiritual joy and meaning and direction in your life. But the more you take it up, the more you come to what we really, really want. We really, really want a community where there's really a center, where there's real harmony, where there's no exploitation, there's no embarrassments, it's nothing temporary. That we all have the same center, and yet we're fully who we are. We're fully individuals. It's not just that we're amalgamated. So my suggestion is that you take this Sangha as a means to go deeper. And what's nice about spiritual life is there's no limit. It's not that you can say, okay, now I've reached perfection, I'm done now. Now what do I do? You know, like sometimes, maybe some of you have even played computer games, but I'm sure you've seen somebody, you all seen somebody play a computer game? Everybody, high school. So you reach a limit, or any kind of game, you reach a limit. Now you've won everything. There's no other place to go. Or in an occupation, it's sometimes like that. You come to the limit of your occupation. You've mastered it. There's no further work. There's no other place to go with it. It becomes boring. So spiritual life isn't like that. Even when one becomes pure, one can still go on and on and on. Because Krishna is always expanding. The spiritual world's always expanding. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati says in his commentary on Anandam Buddhivardhanam, he expands the ocean of bliss. That although the jiva is very, very small, it has the capacity for unlimited enjoyment. Unlimited must mean it's always expanding. Always expanding. So one can always go deeper and deeper and deeper into spiritual life. So of course, going deeper into spiritual life seems rather scary for a conditioned soul. It seems like it's a very high price. Sometimes just doing the first things in spiritual life seem like it really scary. You know, well, God, if I can't eat onions and garlic anymore, what am I going to do when I go back to India and my mother wants to serve me something with onions in it? What do I say? I don't want to offend my mother. You know, and I'll take in my vow to my guru and I'll say I'm not going to eat onions and garlic, and then my mother's not going to understand. There's going to be a whole fight in the house, and what am I going to do? Right? It seems very scary. Suppose I can't follow everything. I've heard other people struggle. Maybe I'm going to struggle. Or maybe Krishna really isn't so nice. Maybe it's not all going to work out. Maybe I'm never going to be able to do it. You know, it seems really, really hard. It seems really, really high. I mean, gosh, I can hardly do the basic minimum things. How am I going to give it my false ego and my greed and my anger? And so why bother to try? Right? Sometimes it seems really, really scary. But I'd like to suggest that material life is a lot scarier. So that's a little exercise I like to do. I don't know if I've ever done it with you guys. But are you ready to play a little game? Anybody have to play a game? Take a play game?
Yes. No, we're really tired. We've worked hard all day.
We just want you to entertain us. We're not really interested in playing games. Can we just sit here? It's not a hard game. That works, doesn't it? Just like putting cookies in his mouth. Does that work? How old is he?
One.
One? 1 year and 3 months? So let's see. My son would have been about 1 year and 8 months or so. And we were sitting in a darshan with Srila Prabhupada. And that's the only one of my children who could sit quietly for 45 minutes. I could time it. He'd sit in my lap, 45 minutes he wouldn't move. And at 45 minutes he'd want to play with my keys, then for 15 minutes, and then after that 15 minutes, then it was all over. So we were trying to stay there a little longer, and there was a plate of laglus. So I was doing what you're doing. And I thought about that. This is totally off topic. But I thought about that a lot. How, you know,
You don't want to train your children by feeding them sweets whenever you want them to behave, right? That'd be terrible. If your whole child training method consisted of giving your kid sweets, you never really messed up kid. But sometimes it's very useful. Sometimes it's very useful. Just give them a sweet, they'll be quiet, and you can do what you want to do. So I see it's very much like that with the mind. That the way we train the mind is we have to get the mind attached to Krishna. That's the actual training for the mind. But sometimes you also have to give the mind some biscuits. That's one of the main purposes, by the way, of grihastha life. It's like biscuits for the mind. You have your house. Okay. I gave you a house. I gave you a wife. I gave you a car. I gave you kids. I gave you money. Be quiet. Let me chant Hare Krishna. It's very much like that. Mind goes, I want this. Okay, here, take it. Now be quiet. Let me chant. But that's not the ultimate way you control them. Okay. So I was talking about things being a little scary, right? Okay. It's a little scary. I asked you if you want to play a game. You ready now for the game?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'd like you to think about all the material desires you've ever had in your whole life. Okay, you got them? All of them? I got like a football stadium full of them. Lots and lots and lots of them. All the things you ever wanted materially. Okay? I'd like you to think about what percentage of them you didn't get at all in any form whatsoever. They just didn't come. You wanted a certain kind of shoes and you just never got them. So what percentage of the things in your life that you desired did you not get at all? What would you say? Can't ask her. It's your life. All right, I'll ask you. What percentage of the things in your life that you wanted did you not get at all? You don't understand English. You're just sitting here being polite. That's nice. Do you understand English? No, you're also just being polite. Sir, should I have had a translator? If there's a lot of people who don't understand English, then classes should be translated. Just for the future. Is there any of the ladies who know English? Any lady who knows English? Do you know English? Do you know English? Speaking is... Then tell me! Don't just sit there. Say, Urmila, slow down! And I'll slow down. Okay. I'll say this more slowly. Think of all the material desires you've ever had. Okay? Do you understand? Huh? Am I going slowly enough? Yes? Yes? No? Actually, yes? Because I'm going to ask you to answer the question. So think of all the material desires you've ever had. What percentage of them did you not get in any form whatsoever? I'll ask one of the men first. You, sir, what percentage of them did you not get in any form whatsoever?
Percentage, how do we calculate?
Something you wanted a car and you didn't get the car. Wanted a particular job, you didn't get the job. It's some estimate. Are you a scientist? Do you want a precise calculation? What's your occupation?
I'm working at a planning engineer.
Yeah.
In fact, I want to become a doctor.
That's
but it doesn't happen.
When I did this in Oman, there was one psychiatrist. He said, how do you precisely calculate that? I said, this isn't a scientific experiment. Rough estimate.
My ambition was I want to become a doctor,
but
it
you didn't
happen.
So how? Okay. So how many of your ambitions did you not get fulfilled at all?
Sad that I don't have ambition at all. That was the lesson.
That was your lesson. Okay, but you have to be careful because that may be Buddhism.
No, but I found out the ultimate.
Okay,
of
good.
The life.
All right, but up till that point, how many of your ambitions did you have that didn't? Up to the point that now you have no more material ambitions. Before that, before you had no material ambitions, how many of your material ambitions about never happened?
Say
50%. 50%. Okay.
After Krishna consciousness, there is no desire to serve Vaishnava. Serve
no, material desires.
Material desires.
You never had any material desires in your whole life?
Before.
Before. How many of them did not get fulfilled at all?
Fulfilled, some fulfilled.
Yes, some and some not. Which ones not fulfilled? How many? What percent? I want you to think like that now. Ten 10%, 30%, 70%? What do you think?
Decided after husband and a daughter engineer.
She also needs to have it all, the statistics. Okay. With the baby, with the cookies, what would you say? What percent of your desires never got fulfilled?
Actually, from the beginning, I was not desiring much.
Okay.
Very
advanced people.
I got everything.
Why am I giving this class? All of you only already want pure devotional service. It's no problem.
I was like that. Whatever I wanted, it will be there.
So
he was giving me everything which I wanted. So maybe naturally because of that I didn't have further desires.
Uh-huh. Have you had any desires that not fulfilled?
No, I didn't think so. No.
That's fair. I've never had anyone say that. I have had people tell me 100% of their desires were not fulfilled, which I don't believe. But I've never had anyone say that 0% of their desires were not fulfilled. That's very interesting. Okay. You must have some extraordinary karma. Okay, some other lady, what would you say for yourself? Well, I want you to think now. This is very difficult. Some idea. Some things you wanted that you never got. About what percentage of the things that you wanted did you not get? Okay, 80-85%. Okay, thank you. Okay, another one of the men, somebody else. Just volunteer. Yes?
50%.
Some other lady, some volunteer. Yes?
75 fulfilled,
25
not.
25 not, okay. All right, now, you've had certain desires that you wanted and you got them. You wanted and you got them. So whether it was you got 25% or you got 100% or you have no desires, so you're out of the game. So I want you to take the material desires you had and you got them. What percentage of those were not exactly what you expected? Like you wanted to buy a DVD player, you bought it, you brought it home, but it didn't quite have the features that you wanted. You said, oh, this wasn't exactly like advertised. You know, you wanted a job, you got the job, and when you got the job, you said, wasn't really what I had in my mind. So what percentage of your material desires did you get, but they were disappointments? What would you say?
So fulfilled. So it's fulfilled.
But they're fulfilled, but not
complete.
Not satisfactory. Yeah. What percentage?
30%.
30%. Okay. Let's see. We'll try you. What do you say? Do you always just sit in class and don't say anything, so I'm embarrassing? Okay, what about you? What would you say? Yes. Yes, yes?
80% perfect.
80%, so 20% not perfect. Okay. Somebody else over here? What about you? 80% disappointment.
But let us put it out there. Whatever you pay, you will get it. Whatever you pay, you get it.
But sometimes you get it and it's not what you thought. It
Which
wasn't.
Means you're not choosing the right one. You're not choosing the right one that you are supposed to be getting.
I'd like one. What about you in the back in the blue? How many of your, what percentage of your material desires disappointed you?
70, 40.
Okay, 70 disappointed?
No, 40.
40 disappointed. Okay, so now we're left. Oh, I didn't ask you, because you said you got all your desires fulfilled. Were any of them disappointments, or were they all perfect?
No, I didn't have any.
No disappointments. Wow. Wow. That's pretty amazing. I'm going to go shopping with you next time. Okay.
Because we have to think 10 times before buying something. This is what my father taught.
You have to think 10 times before buying
something? Yeah. Because this is going to be useful for you.
You think about it 10 times.
You're going to lie simply at home.
And it never disappoints you.
Maximum.
Interesting life. Okay. So now we have the things, you wanted them, talking about material things, you wanted them, you got them, and they're perfect. So for you, that's 100% of the things you wanted. You wanted them, you got them, and they're perfect. What percentage of those things are temporary? 100%. So what material things do you want? You get them, they're perfect, and you get to keep them. What percent?
Zero.
So it's not very smart to make an investment in something that is zero. So even if spiritual life looks scary and you're not sure, and you think there might be some cost, or there might be some difficulty. And there will be. I'm not going to lie to you and say that spiritual life has no price. It does have a price. As one of my godbrothers told me recently, it's expensive, but it's worth every penny. Like what you said, you get what you pay for. If you want something that fulfills all of your desires perfectly and is eternal, you have to pay something for it. Now, if we had never left the spiritual world, we wouldn't have to pay anything for it. It would have been free. Now, what we have to pay for it is really the only thing we really have to pay for it. It's not so much dealing with our mother about onions. What we really have to pay for it is our ahankar. That's really the problem. Our abhiman. Our ahankar, that's the price. You have to throw that in the fire, the jagya. You have to throw that in the fire of sacrifice. So that sounds very scary to most conditioned souls. And really, the things that we're afraid about, I don't know if I'll really be able to chant 16 rounds every day. I don't know if I can give up onions. You know, do I have to take my demigods off the altar? Those sort of things that we talk about, I'll tell you, they're really all symptoms of being afraid to give up my false ego. Because all of those things have solutions. They all have solutions. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also worshipped the devas. You can worship Krishna and give the devas Krishna prasadam. It's no problem. You can worship the devas as Vaishnavas. It's like we worship Guru. Guru is a jiva. We're not opposed to worshiping persons other than Krishna, but we worship them in a different mood. And all of us have had some family member who was difficult, and it worked out. It really does. It's seems like a big problem, but it works out. And those of us who've taken vows, we find that Krishna helps us to meet our vows. And sometimes it's hard, but any commitment is hard. But without a commitment, it's very difficult to get a full result. Just like, I'm sure you have jobs, right? You have jobs? Did you sign a contract? You don't sign a contract, how do you know the boss will pay you? Just going to work and hope he pays you. No agreement. You never shake hands, you never have any agreement, you just go into the place of business and do your work and you just...
The agreement what you make.
Yeah, some agreement. Right? Do you just work without an agreement? No. But it's risky. Isn't it risky? You don't know for sure. What to speak of marriage, that's really risky. Right? You don't know exactly what the person's going to be like. And who knows, maybe day after marriage, the person you marry can get hit by a truck and be paralyzed and disfigured. Happens. You don't know. You may think, oh, I'm marrying a beautiful young woman and she ends up being an invalid. You have to take care of the rest of your life. I've seen it happen. You don't have to gamble, isn't it? You don't know. But still, you make a commitment. You don't really know, am I going to be able to love this person, take care of this person whole life? What to speak of children? At least with a spouse, you can meet them first. You can look at the horoscope. You can look at the family. Child, you don't know what the horoscope's going to be until they're born. You don't know if the child's going to be healthy. You don't know if your personalities are going to match. How do you know? But you make that commitment, isn't it? You have a child. It's commitment for life. You don't say, okay, now, sorry, I made a mistake. Buy a house, it's a commitment. Without commitment, there's no love. Modern society, at least in America and in Europe, starting now in India also. I read in one magazine in an airplane years ago, about 3 years ago, that now in the Indian cities, 30% of the young people are just having sex without marriage. Openly. But this idea is especially in places like Sweden and Denmark. Why marry? But then there's no love. Oh, I'm here if I feel like it, and if I feel like it, I'll go away. That's not love. Love is, I'm with you, whatever. So therefore we make a commitment to Krishna. And then Krishna makes a commitment to you. I'll bring you to your real community. I'll bring you to your real home. I'll bring you to your real family. You know how nice it is to gather with people from your home place in India here, in Dubai. If you think of the best that you get from this community, multiply that millions and billions of times. And that's what Krishna's offering. He says, come on, come back to your real community and your real home. But yes, there has to be some commitment, some jagya. Otherwise, no love. And if you find it scary, my suggestion is make a little step. Take a little step. Take something that's a little bit scary, but not too scary. And say, all right, Krishna, I'm going to commit to this. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests that first you make a commitment for 3 days. So you can take some way in which you've kind of been avoiding spiritual life, something you're holding on to. And if you're not holding on to anything, like some of these ladies here, they're already in prema. But those of us, those unfortunate people like myself, we're still holding on to something. So you can, and if you don't know what you're holding on to, you can ask Krishna. Some people say, I don't know, I don't think I have any attachments. So ask Krishna, he'll tell you what your attachments are. Just say, Krishna, please show me what would be a good thing. And take something and say, okay, Krishna, for 3 days, either I won't do this thing or I will do this thing. Or sometimes it's just an attitude. something we're really worried about. Wait, am I going to have enough money? Am I going to have enough money? Am I going to have enough money? I'm going to say, Krishna, for 3 days, I'm going to let you worry about the money. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to do my job. And I'm going to let you worry about it. I'm going to give you the worries. So it could be that. It could be saying, I'm going to chant a round of japa every day. It could be I'm going to read some Bhagavad Gita every day. It could be I'm going to not put onions in my food. It could be I'm going to unplug the television. Terrible thought. I take a vow. I'm going to do this for 3 days. I'm going to take a step. And if you don't like it, you can always go back. You can always plug the TV back in. And then you see after 3 days, how did it work out? Did my life fall apart? Was it terrible? Did I lose all my happiness? All the things I was afraid of, did they happen? If they did, then you go back. No problem. And if they didn't, then you might want to say, okay, I'll take a vow now for 2 weeks. At the end of the 2 weeks, you see, how did it go? You might say, that didn't work very well. I think I won't do that anymore. I'll do something else. Maybe that's not the right step for me to take right now. Maybe I need to take a different step. Or you might say, okay, it was okay. At the end of 2 weeks, take a vow for a month. After that, 3 months. And then you can evaluate. Every 3 months you can review and you can say, how did that go? Could I do it? Could I do it happily? Was I in anxiety? Did my whole life fall apart? Did everybody hate me? Whatever you're afraid of. If it didn't work, then don't do it anymore. If it worked, you can do it again. And take another vow for another 3 months. And then maybe after you've gone 2-3 years, then you can say, maybe I can make a commitment for the rest of my life. So take a little step, go deeper. Well, don't be satisfied just with the external social sangha. That's very nice. And even if you are satisfied with that, it will certainly give you benefit. It's not an all or nothing proposal. But you can have so much more. Why be satisfied simply with that? You can be connected with your eternal family. And what's really wonderful is that we don't really get rid of all of our material attachments. We can't. Daivi esha gunamayi mama maya duracheya. It's Krishna's divine energy. Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam durantite. You just take some steps toward Krishna and then he will remove. But you have to take some steps. Like if you have some tumor, you have to go to the doctor. The doctor doesn't come in your home in the middle of the night without your permission to remove your tumor. The doctor has to remove, but you have to go to the doctor. So you need to take some steps if you want to achieve perfection. If you don't want to achieve perfection, that is also okay. You can come take prasadam and chant Hare Krishna and be with the devotees. That's all right. We don't say, like my father asked Prabhupada, he said, is it all right if I come to the temple even if I'm not wanting to worship Krishna? I'm not interested in spiritual perfection. I'm not interested. Of course, later he became interested. He said, I'm not interested. Prabhupada said, yes. He said, I have my own religion. Prabhupada said, that's all right. We were in Chicago. Prabhupada said, there are many planes going to Chicago. As long as they are going to Chicago, it's okay. And my father said, I'm coming here just to see my daughter and son-in-law. So you may be coming just to see your friends. That's all right. Prabhupada told my father, and he said, they are loving Krishna. So I was thinking, I don't love Krishna. He said, chanting and dancing are symptoms of loving Krishna. He said, so they are loving Krishna, and you are loving them, so two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. So even if you're coming just to be with your friends, if some of your friends love Krishna, that's also very nice. No problem. But if you want to go deeper, you can achieve eternally everything you are desiring. Beyond, 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 beyond. And then you will also say, it looked expensive, but I got a really good bargain. I really got a good bargain. It turned out what I paid was nothing. Practically, it was free compared to what I got. So we have about 7 minutes for questions, and I can take questions on any topic. It doesn't have to just be what I'm talking about. Yes?
Thank you very much, Mataji, for such a nice, simple, enlightening class. And also, I thank you, Mataji, for coming, although it might have become me waiting for you after coming in the afternoon. So thank you very, very much. Very grateful to you.
Thank you.
In your class, you told Mataji that we don't suppress desire, because if you suppress desire, you become angry. And
Or the desire will reassert itself.
Yes. And also, you went on saying that all the Acharyas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said that our philosophy is fulfillment of the desire.
Yes.
So just for my better understanding, does this fulfillment of desire is now telling of the desire, because I might have desire to watch television. So if I say that, fulfillment of my desire is watching television.
No, you don't have a desire to watch television. First of all, sometimes you repress some desires temporarily. Otherwise, you're not civilized. But just like feeding the child sweets, that's not the solution. I hope nobody tries to train their children just by giving them sweets every time they cry. But sometimes it's useful. So sometimes we do need to repress our emotions and our desires. Otherwise life is chaos. But anyway, you don't desire to watch television. What you desire is fun, relaxation, safe adventure. You can watch something scary and adventurous and exciting while sitting comfortably in your chair. There's no real danger. Relaxation, rejuvenation. Why else does a person watch television? Maybe knowledge. Maybe community. Especially lonely people sometimes watch television because they feel connected to the people on the television set, which is a pretty sad way to get community. But many people do that. They start to feel that they know the characters, especially a show that comes on over and over again. You start to feel you know those characters. You feel they're like your neighbors. All of those are spiritual desires. The desire for fun, for adventure. Krishna says, I am adventure. All Krishna has is fun. Lila, Krida. That's all he does, is fun. Krishna's full of peace and relaxation, rejuvenation. Krishna is rejuvenation means youthfulness. Krishna is very youthful. Krishna is full of safe adventure. On television, you watch some show with some hero. I'm sorry, I'm a little out of date. Things like Superman, James Bond, I don't know who the latest heroes are. But they never die, right? Superman's not going to die. Because then they could never show another show. But still it's exciting, right? How is he going to get out of this problem? And you're not going to be hurt, you're just sitting in your chair. So everyone knows Krishna's not going to die. Kali is attacking, Bakasura is swallowing him, Shalva's throwing tree trunks on Dwarka. Jarasandha's army is surrounding him. You can't see him anymore. But Krishna's not going to die. You know you're not going to get hurt because you're the soul. But it's still exciting. And there's adventure. Safe adventure. Safe excitement. And wonderful stories. Stories about supernatural things, right? What are you looking for? What are you looking for when you watch television? You're looking for... What are you looking for? Krishna! Looking for Krishna. You take any material desire and you boil it down, you're looking for Krishna. What makes it material? You're looking for Krishna in the wrong place. That's the problem. The problem isn't that you're looking for Krishna. There's no problem with that. There's no problem with wanting peace and relaxation and fun and adventure and knowledge. Don't stop that. Are you going to find it in the television set? Are you? Are you going to find the complete, total satisfaction of those desires in the television set? No. That's what makes it material. Therefore, we say, don't do things materially. Not because we hate you, because we want you to be happy. If your child says, I want biscuits, and they're looking in the wrong drawer, and you say, no, it's in that drawer, you're not saying that because you hate your child. You're saying that because you love your child. Right? Isn't it? You don't go to the electronics store for apples. So if you're trying to find Krishna in a materialistic way, all you will get is frustration, anger, bitterness, grief. Therefore, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra say, that's not a good idea. Why don't you look in the right place? But if you just try to repress those desires, it won't work. They're spiritual desires, coming from the soul. Does that make sense? Okay. And the desire to watch television, you're probably not reading enough Krishna Lila. Or if you're reading, you're just reading officially. Okay, I did my reading for the day. What did I read? I don't know. Meditate on it. Krishna Leela is pretty amazing. And you know what? All of Krishna's Leela, in all of his incarnations, Krishna's in our heart, right? Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridayesha Junatisthiti. He's in our heart. Well, if Krishna's there, guess what? All of his pastimes are going on in our heart. They're right there. You don't even need to buy a television set. You just need to plug it in. You've already got a television set in your heart. So you cultivate that. Think about Krishna's pastimes. They're a lot of fun. I mean, whatever you like, even if you like blood and gore. It's pretty funny, huh? Even if you like horror movies, you know, read about the battle with Jarasandhar. Whoa. Or Nrsingadev. It's pretty horrific. Right? Isn't it? Meditate on it. If you meditate on it, the Lord will be pleased. And he'll start to reveal those pastimes in your heart. And eventually you'll get to the point where if you want to see transcendental television, you can just tune. You can tune to the Ramachandra channel, Matsya channel, Kurma channel, Krishna and Vrindavan channel. But you got to practice. Krishna's not going to manifest in your heart if you're meditating on Superman. You know, your wife's not going to talk to you if you're out carousing with other women. Right? She's just not. That's pretty funny too, isn't it? She might not leave you if she's a nice, respectable Indian woman, but she probably won't talk to you much. So Krishna won't leave your heart if you're out having an affair with Maya. That's really what we're doing. We're cheating on Krishna. So if we're having an affair with Maya, he won't leave us. He's very cultured. He won't get a divorce. But he won't have much to do with us. He won't really talk to us much. Is that okay? You can analyze all material desires like that. They're all looking for Krishna in the wrong way. What we really want is nothing anybody wants that is bad. It's all spiritual. But the way you're doing it is bad. The way you're going about it is bad.
In Gita, Bhagavad says the desire which flows like a river and enters into the ocean, which never fulfilled.
Yes, you're not disturbed by those desires.
How to attain that stage?
By being full. Perfect verse. Why is the ocean not disturbed by the rivers? Because the ocean is already full. Just like on the way here, I already had some prasadam. So I said, make sure you call, tell them I won't want to eat. You know the story of Durvasa Muni and the Pandavas? You all know that story? So Durvasa Muni was going to visit the Pandavas at Duryodhana's instigation, of course. Durvasa Muni was going to visit the Pandavas. And Durvasa Muni, Durvasa means like bad face, you know, or sometimes bad dress. Sometimes people say it means he's naked because he has no dress, but sometimes people say it means he has bad face. Anyway, he was very bad tempered. So he goes to visit the Pandavas. Sometimes, some versions of Mahabharata say 10,000 disciples, some say 60,000. Could you imagine 60,000 people come to your home and want to be fed? So thankfully Draupadi had this pot that could supply unlimited food, but Duryodhana specifically said go there at a time when Draupadi's eaten, because every day when she ate, that was it for her magic pot. So then they were in trouble, 60,000 people to feed and no food. So Krishna came and he ate one little something that was stuck to the pot, one little speck. And when he ate, then all of the 60,000 people, they were taking bath, they all felt full. So they thought, we better not go, because if you go to the home and you're full, then you'll offend your host. Because they'll say, no, I don't want this. They'll think they don't like their cooking, you know. They'll be offended. So they just left. So the reason that the devotees are not interested in the material desires is because they're already full. The reason I'm not interested in watching television is I'm meditating on how Krishna's dancing on Kaliya, or how Krishna's fighting with Jarasandhar, how Krishna's kidnapping Rukmini, how Krishna's appearing in the water of the Yamuna to Akura, how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is dancing in the Ratiyatra, how Kurma's getting his back scratched under Mandara Mountain, how Matsya's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. How Vamandeva is stepping through the universe. Or meditating on the devotees. How Dhruva is doing his austerities. Prahlad Maharaj. Meditating on modern devotees. Srila Prabhupada. His adventures. Therefore I'm full. Because all my reasons for wanting to watch television are satisfied. I mean, if you have a delicious meal, why would you want to eat something not very tasty? Hey? If I give you gulab jamuns, one plate with all your favorite food and another plate with old dry bread. Easy. You have to become full. And when once we become conditioned, that takes some effort. It does take some effort. At first, not forever. It does come to a point where it's natural. But to get to that point, it will take some effort. There'll be a point, until we get to a certain point, there is some struggle with determination. That's true even for material things. If you want to become expert even at a work, you have to struggle first to learn, right? And once you learn it, it becomes automatic, correct? Right? When you're learning how to drive, first you're struggling, especially if it's with a clutch. Do you know how to drive a stick? Everybody know how to drive a stick? Did you stall sometimes when you were first learning? Yes? Right? Especially going up a hill? Right? And after driving, you don't even think anymore. But at first it's like, okay. And you have to really think about it. Like with this broken foot, I have to really think about going up and down stairs. You can't talk to me when I'm going up and down the stairs. It's like I'm a one-year-old baby having to think about walking. So when we were one-year-old babies, we had to think about walking, or else we would fall. But now we don't think about walking. So to become full with Krishna, first it will take some effort. Yes, it will. And gradually, because it is our natural state, it will come naturally. But you have to persist. But that's how you are able to ignore the material desires, because you already have everything that the material desires could give you. That one, you have to work at that somewhat. Not forever. Is that okay? Did you understand anything? Little. All right? It's after 9:30 and you have to go to work tomorrow. Thank you for coming in the evening on a work day. I hope this was this helpful. I hope so. If I said anything foolish, please ignore. Anything you think is bogus or useless, or if something doesn't apply to your life, please ignore it. And I hope that I've said something that each of you can find valuable in your life. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about Krishna. Thank you very, very much. I'm very grateful. And I think this is my own. I'm just here in this area, in the United Arab Emirates for about 6 days. So I think this is my only time coming to Abu Dhabi. I know it's a long way to Dubai. I know, because we just came there from there. But I think I'll be doing some programs there, and some of the other Emirates also, I think. I'll be doing one or two other, and Shivala Babu and I are going to work this out tomorrow, so you can ask him for the schedule. Is that okay? And we'll be deciding what I'll be doing. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.